We're going to begin on Daf Yutes Amud Beis. Okay. Just before we move on, let's see this first tapis. Then I want to make a couple of general comments about this whole inyan of the exemptions and the different rules of the people participating in the whole funeral, people dealing with the dead body, etc. So Yudaf Yatesam and Aleph, we're going to start with the last halacha that the Mishnah said. Ha'ondim Mishura. The Mishnah had said that when they actually come to the Shura, right, that's the columns that they make to console the dead person, and he comes between them, not the dead person, I'm sorry, the mourner. After the burial is completed, they form columns, and the mourner comes between them, and they console him. So, the Mishnah had said that this is also a process that exempts those involved from Kriyat Shema and from davening, but only the people that are actually performing the mitzvah, and therefore only the people in the innermost row who actually face the ovel are exempt, and the people who are more in the back are not exempt. That's what the Mishnah said. Right, because he's not directly exposed to them. They're not the one. The point is that as he walks through, people are telling him, "Hamakim yinachem eschem," right? And these people, he doesn't really see them. He doesn't. So now we start to test them with Beis up on top. So we're referring to that part of the Mishnah. Tana Rabbanu. So we learn in the Braisa, Shura Haroya Pnima, the innermost row that's facing the inside. They actually see the mourner. Ptura, they're pater because they're actually doing the mitzvah of consoling the men. Vishe'ein aroya pnima, those who do not face the inside, meaning the second row, chayeves, they do have to say kriyat shema, davin, etc. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, haboyim machmas ha'ovel pturim. He gives a different criterion. By a funeral, you have the people who are there to console the mourner. You have the people who are there just because they want to see what's going on. So the people who are really there for the mourner, pturim, they're exempt. They're involved in the mitzvah. Machmas atzmon, they're just there for their own purposes, meaning they want to see what's going on. Chayovim, they are obligated because they're not really involved in a mitzvah. Okay.
The first,
they are being menachem, and there is something of a mitzvah there. It's adding kavod, the fact that there's a bigger crowd, but they're not directly involved in the mitzvah. The actual mitzvah itself of the nichum, they're not doing. So we go with the chachamim. Yeah, we go with the chachamim, and that's taka d'halacha. Sorry. Right, he's saying that it depends on what are you there for. So the truth is that the place can discuss, it could be that Rabbi Huda is really just adding to what the Tanakhama said, meaning it could be that Rabbi Huda is not giving a completely different criterion. Tanakhama said the innermost are exempt, and the back row is chayav. Rabbi Huda is coming and saying even in the back row, those who are there for the ovel are exempt, meaning there's not like a big dispute between them. Rabbi Huda is just adding a point. No, so in the front row, lemaisa, even if you just came for the scene, you lemaisa are consoling. Everyone standing in the front row is consoling, right? They are extending their condolences. People in the back row are not. So therefore, the people in the back row makes a difference. If he's really there to show that kavod, he's exempt. If not, not. The guy who's actually up front and telling the mourner, may you be consoled, so even if he initially came for some other reason, lemaisa, now he's doing the mitzvah, right?
People in the front row, all exempt from Shema, but they are required to say
are they
not gonna scam?
Whatever it is.
Required, or if they don't sell it, would they be then hired to sell Shema?
I would think so. And the point is that they're being menach. The point is that they're actually consoling.
Just by standing there, they say hamak menach.
Standing without saying, I'm not sure, because the Rishonim actually stress that it doesn't really, is not how it manifests today. The mourner basically just walks straight through, and people say it as he passes, but it seems that in earlier times, he actually stopped by each person. So, if so, for a person to stand there and not say anything is going to be a little bit. Yeah.
But if he stand there and say Shema, that could be even worse.
True.
Right. You're answering the morning walking through.
He's
off something else.
He's somewhere else. Oh, that's the point. That would be like being on the cell phone. Right. I don't know. Right.
So the Maisa
today,
they try to make it a point to have
a funeral after the first 3 hours of the day. Oh, right. So the Maisa, we always try to avoid this. That's right. We always try to avoid this situation. That's what we saw in the Gemara. This whole situation is b'di'evit. Funerals should be scheduled either to end before this month, or to begin after this month.
In Israel, it's not so backward. In the United States, the unions wouldn't like to do it any other time.
right. Okay, so I just wanted to make a couple of comments. Comes out, first of all, in this Gemara per se, where we're saying that not only the involvement with the dead himself exempts you, but also the involvement with the mourner exempts you. Right? The mitzvah of Nichum Avelim. Now, we explained that that's because Nichum Avelim is also a bona fide mitzvah, right? The live mourner is not any worse than the dead man. Or is he? So, but meaning, if your involvement with the dead body is enough to exempt you, because you're involved in a mitzvah, so now is the next stage. You're finished with the body, he's buried, but now you're involved with the live mourner, right? So, it seems logical, it seems reasonable that should exempt you just the same. It's just as much of a mitzvah to actually console the mourner after the burial.
After you finish with the burial, there's no longer involved with the mitzvah.
Oh, but now you're involved with a different mitzvah. You're consoling the mourner. Right, so it's a different mitzvah and a different exemption. Meaning it's a new stage of exemption.
Why should it be the same
now? Because you're consoling the mourner. We're not talking about the mourner himself. We're talking about the participants of the Levaya. Right? They buried the dead. Now the mourner is coming back and he's waiting to be consoled.
The same dead was involved
in the Mason. He said, second row. Yeah, no, he'll be chayiv. But all I'm pointing out is that if the guy who was involved with the Mason is now standing in the second row, he'll have to daven. But we're saying that the people of the Mason are involved with consoling the mourner are exempt.
I know that the mitzvah is the Torah, the mitzvah, you have to take care of it. But where does it say anything about taking care of a mourner?
Oh, so that's what we're going to get to now. So the truth is that this point is controversial. And the Rishon, there's a little bit of discussion. This point that you're exempt not only on account of taking care of the body, but also on account of consoling the mourner afterwards, is not so clear cut. There are Rishonim that say that no, we derive from Sukkim that consoling mourners, it's actually Gemara, we derive from Sukkim that consoling mourners is a mitzvah de'oraisa, and therefore it's no less a chiyuv as anything else. And yes, you're involved in that mitzvah, you're exempt, and therefore when the Gemara here says that those coming back and those who are standing in the shul are exempt, it means even if you can miss this man kriyat shema.
What are they hanging on?
No, it's a drush in the Gemara. I don't remember the precise drush. It says Vaydatem Saderech Sheyel Chuba. I forgot. It's a drush in the Gemara. So that's how the Ritva puts it, and other Rishonim. It's actually Deraisa. Nichum Avelim is Deraisa, and therefore we have a full fledged exemption, even if you can completely miss Kriyas Shema Davening. Others say the Rambam, for example, and Rashi implies this too, because Rashi says. Okay, forget Rashi right now. I'll find it. But the Rambam says that no, Nichum Avelim is a mitzvah derabbanan. The Jerusha that we have for it is what we call an asmachta. And therefore, he says all this talk about being exempt from Kriyashma is if there's going to be time afterwards to read it. doesn't mean that there's really an absolute exemption. It means that while you're busy with the mourner, don't say it, as long as there's going to be time afterwards to say it. But otherwise, do say it.
Why would you think you would say it to the
Kutotot and the Tote? One is Doraisa and the other is Rabba. Yeah? So the truth is that this is that. What's that?
So, the funeral, for whatever reason, is right after an ace. Funeral takes an hour. Excuse me. After the funeral, there's a clear.
Oh, so that's for sure. If the funeral finished and there's still plenty of time, for sure you have to daven. But the question is, right now I see that being busy with the mourner is going to go straight till after this month. Am I completely exempt? Can I just skip Kriyat Shema? Or do I have to step out and say Kriyat Shema? So this Lamaisa is a machlokes, which is actually funnels down to the Shulchan Aruch as well. The Shulchan Aruch seems to follow the ruling that no, this is an absolute exemption. That, yes, the people are involved right now with consoling the mourner right after the burial is a full-fledged mitzvah which exempts you from other mitzvahs even if you're going to completely miss on Kriyat Shema, whereas the Ramah actually does come and inserts those key words. Right, the Shulchan Aruch says, you know, they come back, they're exempt, etc., and the Ramah inserts if there will be time afterwards to say Kriyat Shema, meaning he's ruling that no, this is not necessarily a mitzvah that completely exempts you. And Lamaisa, it continues to be debated by the Poskim whether, yes, this element of Nichum Avelim really exempts a person, or just means that if you have time afterwards, don't do it now. First finish consoling the mourner. Machloikis. Okay. Doesn't go by mitzvah veris. If you're involved with the mitzvah before this beforehand, even if it's a mitzvah veris, you don't stop. Okay. Meaning, that's what we discussed the other day, that's why we explain. If the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema would kick in before you started consoling, you'd have to say Kriyat Shema. But that's what we discussed from the Shanim the other day, that either the pshat is that it's continuation of the mitzvah of burying the dead, so you never stop being involved, or, like the Ritva said, that the mitzvah of Nichum kicks in immediately when the mitzvah of the burial ceases. Okay. Fine, we'll move on. Now we're going to move into a very broad, interesting discussion that connects to one of these halachas, but it's really a whole new discussion. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, listen to this. Hamoitze kil ayim bevigdoi. If a person discovers that there's shatnez in his clothing, poishtan afilu bashuk. You have to take it off, even in the marketplace. The person would have to take off his pants.
Even if there
no.
are women around?
What's that?
Even if there are women around?
No matter what. My timer. Now, why is that? Now, the Gemara asks, why is that? Because we know that human dignity is considered an issue of paramount importance. And we do find many leniencies that are presented in order to preserve human dignity, but yet we're saying here we draw the line. And the answer is Ein Chachma Vein Tvuna Vein Eitzel Neged Hashem. When you're standing up against Hashem, there's no wisdom, there's no understanding, there's no counsel, meaning all of your wisdom counts for nothing. As great as a human being is, it's all nothing when you're facing Hashem. And therefore Kamakam Sheyesh Chilul Hashem, wherever it's an issue of desecrating Hashem's name, which really means doing Aveira, it doesn't mean necessarily that he's advertising that he has Shatnez on. It could be that he's the only one who knows. But an Aveira is a desecration of Hashem's name. Ein chokin kovod l'rav. We don't accord anybody else honor. Meaning, yeah, sure, your honor, your dignity is very important until it is pitted against Hashem's. So when it's your honor against Hashem's, human honor simply fades away. What's that? If a woman is wearing shatnez. Tough question. I don't know. I didn't see it ruled upon. We'll see something kind of similar in a later Gemara, which we probably won't get to today. We'll see.
When you say you have to do something to cover the wrist, it's because sun is going against Hashem's wishes.
Right. What's that?
It's going against Hashem's wishes. So, to the knockout.
I'm sorry, again?
In other words, you're to say that Hashem is not going to say expressions of God.
Right.
The idea that you're invoking the idea of the embrace, it's always because...
Because it's coming up against something. Oh, okay. So we're going to have to see. That's basically what this sugya is going to be figuring out.
The fact of a woman where husband's wouldn't be similar to a sota loosening her hair, coin loosening her sota's hair.
That's a very interesting point. That's a very interesting point, Hanami. He's saying that it was asked here, what if a woman would be wearing shatnez? Should she take her clothing off? And we see that when it's necessitated, that would be the case. She would be expected to run right home, I guess. I don't know. It's an interesting extrapolation that you're saying. We see that by saita, when there is a need to do what we need to do, yes, they take off her head covering and they actually rip her shirt, even though there are men around. So possibly that can be applied here. I wonder.
Limited attendance.
Yes, but at the same time, that wouldn't make a difference. Sure, people shouldn't be looking. In our case also, anybody who's there should turn around. Right? We certainly don't encourage people to come watch the show. But the very fact that when it's necessitated, it's a very interesting riot. I hear.
Also, I would suggest that Kavod HaBriyos, when we normally invoke it, is in the case of a Derabanan or a Midha, you don't have to go to Oraisa's life.
Oh, coming up. Oh, that's what the sugi is going to be trying to clarify. When do we say this? Because there certainly is a concept that Kavod HaBriyos goes far. And this sugi is going to be trying to figure out how far. So the sugi starts with a bombshell. Shatnez is in your pants, the pants come off right in the middle of the street. Now, so now the Gemara challenges this. Is that so? Meaning, does Kavod HaBriyos, does human dignity not override Torah prohibitions? Meitzvei, we're going to challenge that. Kavru es hames.
You still use it, shield yourself.
Yeah, that you could do. Meisavei, so we're going to challenge that. Kavru es hames v'chazir. And here's where it ties into what we've been discussing, because it comes into play, this concept comes into play with regard to a mourner. They buried the dead and now they're coming back. So everybody's escorting the mourner back to town. V'lifneim shtei drachim. And on the way there are two paths back to town. Achas tahoira v'achas tmeah. One path is Torah, the other path is Tameh, meaning there's a body buried on the road, in the road. And there are Kohanim here. And they're all walking him back to town. Now, Babit Haira, Bain Imay Bit Haira. And here we say we are focused now on the respect of the mourner. And therefore, he's coming back from the cemetery to town. We finished Lovaya. Yeah. But he's coming back from the cemetery to town, and there are two roads you can take. One of those roads has a grave. Its main meaning, one of those roads is barred to Kohanim. Now, if the mourner walks through the Tahar road, Bayin Imay B'Tahira, we escort him through the Tahar road. Babitmeya, if he walks through the Tameh road, Bayin Imay B'Tameya, everybody, including the Kohanim, walk through that Tameh street. Mishum Kvaidai, because of his honor. Right now we're involved in his respect and his honor, and therefore, yes, Kohanim should walk through the Tamei street rather than leave the Levi. Oh, that's why the Gemara is bringing this in. The Gemara said, we're challenging what we just said.
That's going in the opposite direction.
What's that?
That's
what the Gemara is asking here.
No,
so obviously talking about a case where the Kohen stayed outside of the cemetery. That would be also to, for him to enter. So am I. So the Gemara is. No, it's all part of the process of the Nichum, is walking him back home. Everybody comes together. That's the way it was done. Everybody comes together with him back to town. So am I. Why is this? Why are we saying that Kohanim should walk through the Tamei path? Lema, why don't we say Ein Chachma Vein Tvudna LeNeged Hashem? There's no wisdom, there's no understanding when it's facing off against Hashem. So here we see that yes, we would even override the Oraisa to uphold human dignity. So why can't the person with the shatnez keep his pants on? Here it's not covered on mace. The dead is already buried. Yeah, it's the other. So the Gemara answers. Tirgim Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba says no. This does not mean that a kohen can really become tame. Certainly not. Beveis hapras derabanan. We're talking about a grave that's only tame midrabanan. The famous concept of beis hapras, which means as follows: a grave is tame. There are no two ways about it. A kohen can never walk over there. Yes, even if it means breaking up the levaya, the kohen has to go the other direction. Beis hapras is a very unique situation where you had a grave which got plowed over. It got plowed over, which means that basically the skeleton got all broken apart, ground up, whatever it is, and now there's no more skeleton underneath the ground. There are pieces all around the area.
This the whole world was paved over the grave.
Oh, so here we'd be talking more about a field than a grave. Let's say they're coming through a field. Or an area where it's not hard, right? So now it switched from a skeleton in this spot to pieces of bones scattered around, the Gemara says, a 50 amma radius. That's how much we consider we have to be concerned that there might be pieces of bone. Now, there's no longer a problem. Once the skeleton has been broken apart, there's no longer a problem of a kohen just passing over. Because why is it also for a kohen to pass over a grave, to walk over a grave? He's not touching the body. The problem is tumas oil, that the tumma of the body goes up. But that's only, when you're talking about a skeleton, that's only if you have the bulk of the skeleton. Once it's broken into little pieces, there's no longer such tumma. And therefore, for a kohen to pass over the skeleton is okay as long as he doesn't touch it. What's the concern? The concern is that there might still be little pieces of bone that he's actually going to kick. That's the concern. And that's why a kohen should not pass through this area of 100 by 100 amas, a radius of 50 amas, around where the grave used to be. Because he might kick a small piece of bone. But this is only derabanan. Midarai, so we don't have to be concerned about this. This is only derabanan. So this is considered a grave midirabanan, this whole area, and therefore we can be more lenient. Such an area, when we say that if the ovel passes through a tame area, the kohen can go along, we don't mean a proper grave. We mean a beis hapras. A beis hapras, which is only tame midirabanan, normally a kohen should not be passing through there. Here he can. Sorry? Yeah.
No.
So they would say, even though normally we tell him not to pass through because he might kick it, in this case where there's an ovel passing through, he can come together with the ovel.
Would this be the story that those who allow Kohanim to go to concentration camps, are they basically saying that it's wasn't in a problem?
They suppress.
They suppress, is that their argument?
I don't know. What would the concentration camp, are there actually graves there? I don't know what the Matthias is.
There's no graves. You see fields, but some of there were millions of people that died in those spots.
Ah, presumably there's nothing left of them. Meaning, otherwise you'd see skeletons on the floor.
Any of those holes that were dug, we don't know if they
actually have. Yeah, I don't know what the subject is.
The person that actually took some bones and then the Chavrativisha had it all buried here.
What?
Someone actually
found a piece of bone.
Person took something from one of these camps.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so there were substantial.
There are pieces. Possibly. I don't know. But anyways, even if we consider it a beis hapras, it's still awesome if there are bone. Right,
if only you were doing, in this case, a mitzvah.
Right. So I don't know what the discussion there would be.
Well, on a similar thing, the areas in Europe where they're now digging up cemeteries and making shopping malls, really shouldn't go into the mall because you don't know where there might be bodies or fossil bodies.
I guess it would depend on the individual case, on each individual case, on exactly what's going on. The possibility is certainly conceivable. Yeah.
I mean, there are people that feel that they wouldn't walk anywhere near any of the concentration camps because they feel the whole place is just one big grave.
Oh, that's another subject. That's not halachic. Fine. So therefore, whatever it is, what we're saying is this is only the Rabbanan, and therefore, yes, we brought this in just to maintain what we said that no, human dignity never will override a deraisa. When we say here that you can walk along with the other in a tamei place, it means this sort of base of pras, which is only tamei the Rabbanan. The Omar of Yehuda Omar Shmuel, as Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, Menapeach Adam Beis HaPras V'Hoylich. We find other leniencies that the Chachamim applied to such an area. For example, they said, if a Kohen wants to walk through a Beis HaPras, you know what he can do? Go with a little fan and just fan the area in front of him. And that way he makes sure that he's not actually stepping on a piece of bone straight out. V'Amar Rav Yehuda Bar Ashim Yishmei D'Rav. And another leniency. What? Was that? Okay, if there's actually a piece of bone in front of him on the floor, he'll see it when he's fanning the area. Again, we're not worried about anything underground. We're worried that he might actually kick it with his foot. There's no more oil here. Why should there be a problem with contact? So the answer to that is that you're right. There's no contact in such a case if he's wearing shoes. But a piece of bone conveys tumah even if you just move it without touching it. That's the concept of masa and hesed. Meaning if you take a stick and push a piece of bone, lamaisa, if you cause it to move, it makes you tumah. Moving a dead body makes one tumah. Just applies for nevela as well. And another leniency. V'amar Rav Yehuda Bar Ashi Mishmei D'Rav. Rav Yehuda Bar Ashi is said in the name of Rav. Beis HaPras Shenidashtar. Another leniency that we find applied to this sort of area. Once it's already been trampled by the public, Kohanim don't have to worry about it anymore. So, in other words, all this is really just to maintain the position that human dignity will never override a deraisa. Yes, we find an instance where it overrides Tuma. But that's only when the Tumah is there, Abba. What's that?
Being dressed properly.
Sorry? Being dressed properly. Doesn't quite mean that. First of all, it means behavior, but it also means not to say Varm Shabikdusha in the presence of Erva. But for a person to just be undressed and rush home, a person would certainly be expected to rush home. But the Chiyuv not to be undressed for a minute in the street, I guess it depends why you're doing it. But no, Kshila Atzmai, apparently not the Araisa. Okay. By the way, I'll just note that this Lamaisa, this is Paskin Lahalacha, but there's a lot of qualifications and how exactly this works. This is Paskin Lahalacha in Shulchan Aruch. A person discovers it's Paskin in a much stronger way in the Halacha. This is how the Rambam puts it. Yes, the person discovers that his pants are shatnas, he has to take them off in the street, but the Rambam says it much stronger. He says if a person is with his Rebbe and his Rebbe is wearing shatnas, he has to tear it off him in the street. That's how it's paskin in the Shulchan Aruch.
Why? Isn't the rabbi with the
kid
himself?
We see if he does. And if he doesn't, the disciple helps him. That's the halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Surprising. What's that? What? This is in Yeridaya. It's not in Arachayim. You don't have Mishan Berurah on that. No, I'll qualify it the way the place can put it down Lemaisa. What's that? It's all of Judaism's business to make sure that all of Judaism observes Torah. That is a general principle. We're going to see as we go along in the sugya here. Whatever it is, there is one big qualification on this. This means, well, at least the Ramah rules this way. This means that if the person is aware that he's wearing shatnez and he's not taking it off because he feels funny, you help him. But Yerushalmi records an interesting incident. That there was a fellow in the Mismedrash in the yeshiva of Rabbi Ami. Somebody pointed out to another Talmud that his clothing was shatnez. Okay, the person hadn't realized that his clothing was shatnez, and somebody pointed out that his clothing was shatnez, which meant that now he has to take his clothing off in the mismedrash. So Rabbi Ami yelled at the person who said it. He said, "Now you give him your clothing." He said, "Now you give him your clothing." Now, what's the idea? The poskim ask. This seems to be. I mean, the guy did the right thing, presumably. If Lamaisa, the guy's mechuyev to take it off, he did the right thing. Is this in disagreement with our Gemara or not? So the Rosh says like this, and this is how the Rama actually paskins. He says, this only applies when a person is mazed. When a person knows he's wearing shatnez, he has to take it off immediately. And if he doesn't, which means that he's willingly transgressing, we can understand the guy, he's certainly being tested in a serious way. But if Lamaisa realizes he's wearing shatnez and he doesn't take it off, it's incumbent upon anybody there to take it off of him. But as long as the person does not know that he's wearing shatnez, his transgression is shoigig. If his transgression is shoigig, that does not warrant taking it off. Meaning, the issue is the severity of the transgression. The severity of a mazed transgression warrants taking the pants off. But if it's shoigig, not. But the bais can say, don't tell him that he's wearing shatnez. What you have to do is tell him that there's an emergency, he has to go home immediately. You do have to try to get him immediately, as fast as possible, to go somewhere where he'll be able to change. See, if he's shug, I mean, if he doesn't realize that his pants are shatnez, you have to tell him. What's that?
If I'm wearing shatnez right now and I don't know it, how are you supposed to know whether I do or don't know it?
What's that?
How are you supposed to know whether I
You can assume that the guy doesn't know it. You can assume the guy doesn't know it.
Or it should be the other question. How can you tell if I'm wearing a shirt or a pair of pants right now whether it's shatnez?
That's a technical question.
For example, a costume store. You went to the costume store, you got a costume, you spec it off, shopping, you put it back on the shelf. And you go shopping, you see your friend walk in, he puts on the same costume, you would just inspect it.
There's an example. Or a suit, right? Same could be for a suit. But the reality is quite conceivable. You just have to think of the case. You're right, it's not so common, but the reality is conceivable. Just a second. And therefore, so again, if the guy knows, yes, you have the chiyuv to get it off him. If the guy doesn't know, then the chiyuv is try to get him as quickly as possible to somewhere where he'll change it, and then he takes it off.
The reason there is no arrayness here is because the given starting point is that he just doesn't know, he's for sure. Whereas in the other case, it's the basic.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's no real arrayness.
No, there still is. That's what the place can draw an interesting distinction. They say you have to tell him to go right away. You do have to tell him, without telling him that it's shatnez, tell him you're needed at home urgently. Right? And once he gets home, tell him it's shatnez.
There's Kavod HaBriyos in the trump, the shogeg.
Exactly. Kavod HaBriyos trumps shogeg, but it doesn't trump mazed. That's how it comes out l'maisa. Now, Essentially, yes. The question is how to apply it in our day and age. Essentially, and again, this is something that certainly is not a popular concept these days, but essentially, yes, you see a person transgressing a deraisa knowingly, you should physically stop him. Today, that might not be prudent. You'll certainly make the headlines. But what's that? Oh, so there you're getting into the questions of people today, generally shoigeg, etc., etc. It gets much more sticky today. But essentially, we have to know that the halacha is not politically correct. The halacha is not politically correct. In halacha, essentially, when we're talking in an ideal world where everybody knows what the halacha is, and you see a person transgressing knowingly, you must physically stop him to the extent of pulling off his pants.
So driving down the street on Shabbat, in a car. People should stop the car and throw away the car.
Essentially, yes. But, again, what we're saying is that today, you're dealing with the concept of shogeg. Right, you're dealing with if there's a way that you can do it in an effective way, it's not just going to cause more chilul Shabbos, you should do so. But what's that?
Throwing rocks at the car?
Rocks are muktzah. But
you're trying to get him out of the car, you couldn't open the car door.
No, you shouldn't open the car door either. But lemaisa, we have to realize that we shouldn't just view these things as completely foreign. They're being done in a way that lemaisa is off. But it's less off than the people who think that the whole concept is completely wacky. You have to realize that it's a fine line. Also, the difference between throwing rocks and actually stopping someone, in the newspapers there won't be any difference, but in halacha there's a very clear difference. If a person physically blocks someone from doing an avera, he is right. If a person throws rocks, he is wrong. Now, protester is all the same thing. Okay, not a simple subject. Let's see a little further. Let's see further. Right, that's why I said, in today's day and age, it's not really going to be effective. That's why in practice, it's not so relevant. What are you going to achieve? You're going to achieve more chilul Shabbos. In practice, it's not so relevant. No, they're the point. If lemaisa, you know that it's just going to exacerbate things. Or we see even that it says in halacha that once you know the person, it says you're mechuyev to protest when you see a person transgressing until the point where he will actually respond violently. Where a person is going to respond violently. If you know that a person is going to respond violently, you're not mechuyev to speak up. Okay.
So I think I heard in the name of the Chazanish that is Manenu, everyone's considered Tinek Shanishva, and therefore instead of the mitzvah of, you know, correcting everyone, the mitzvah becomes more to reach out to them and you know, in a kind way, you know, because they all consider shows that there's so much fear in the world that everything is.
So Chazanish just say in a general way that yes, people today in a broad way are considered Tinek Shanishva, but yet we have to realize that the Chazanish is not really saying that about the essential chiyuv of stopping. There are two things which we have to differentiate between two concepts. There's a concept of preventing an avera, and there's a concept of speaking against them and tearing them down, and even more severe halachas of how you treat a person who does avera. Two separate subjects. Yeah. But lemaisa, at the end of the day, also when it comes to lemaisa preventing, you have to know what are you going to achieve. Are you going to just be counterproductive? In which case, yeah. You have to hurt at what's going on, but you have to know if you're actually going to be able to achieve something or not. Okay. Absolutely. The Chazanish says that this is the one area where it's not a mitzvah and avera. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. We continue the discussion. Toshma. Again, all these concepts don't sit well with Western culture, but that's part of what we're doing when we're learning Gemara. We're conditioning ourselves a little bit, countering a little bit of Toshma. Domar Rabbi Elazar bat Tzadok. So we're going to try to disprove this idea. We're going to try to show that no, maintaining human dignity does override even the arises. Domar Rabbi Elazar bat Tzadok. Rabbi Elazar bat Tzadok said, "Medalgim hayinu al gabe aroinos shel meisim." We used to jump over coffins. Rabbi Elazar bat Tzadok was a kohen, and he said we would jump over coffins, likras malchei Yisrael, to greet Jewish kings. Meaning, when we knew that a king was coming to town with his entourage, we would go running to be there at the reception, even if it meant cutting through a graveyard and running over graves. Now, v'leni kras malchei Yisrael b'levad, not only were we so eager to greet Jewish kings, elafilu likras malchei akum, even to greet non-Jewish kings. Shim yizke yavchim b'malchei Yisrael b'malchei akum. This is a famous concept, that we are very strongly encouraged to see a king if you can, even if it's a non-Jewish king, because it gives us something of a frame of reference as to what the covet of kingship is. That'll help us relate a little bit to who Hashem is. We're told that Moshe Feinstein said, right, there are two men hug him about Shemana Esrei. There's a minig to dafka to shakel, to shake, because it's based on the idea that you want your whole body to be involved in what's going on. And then there's a minig dafka not to shake, stand still, which is very hard, by the way. I don't know if anybody ever tried it. It's very hard to go to stand still without moving. You can do well. You're a more disciplined sort of person, but I don't know. I can't do it for. I tried it once. Can't do it for more than a minute. It's very hard to just stand still for me. But whatever it is, two distinct minhagim. Dafka to shake in order to involve your whole body. Dafka to stand still because that's how you would stand in the presence of the king. So Moshe Feinstein said that his minhag used to be to shakel, used to shake. His minhag used to be to shake in Shemoneh Esrei, but he said one time he had an audience where he was present in an audience with the Russian Tsar, and then he felt for the first time what it really means to be standing in a king's presence, how the wrong twitch can have your head off, and they liked doing it. So he said since then he changed his minhag. After he had that experience, he didn't chuckle anymore in Shemoneh Esrei. That's the idea here. You see a non-Jewish king, it gives you a concept of what rulership is. What's that? I don't know. So whatever it is, this is an issue of, again, Kavod HaBriyos is an interesting manifestation of Kavod HaBriyos, but it's an issue of according kings their due honor. And what do we see? A Kayan was running over grains in order to do that. Isn't this human honor overriding an Avera? Samai, why is this done? Leime, why don't we say Ein Chachma Vein Tvuna Vein Eitzel Leneged Hashem? No wisdom, no understanding, no counsel when it's against Hashem. What's that? The mitzvah is Kavod Malach. Yeah, it's considered to accord a king's honor is considered. I don't know if it's a Chiyuv Dor. It is a Chiyuv Dor, I should tell you, Masa Yelecha. That's about Jewish kings, but the concept of Poy Malchus is very strong even in the Torah. We see, right? We see Yaakov Avinu according his son honor as a king, and we see Moshe Rabbeinu according Paro honor as a king. So whatever it is, what's going on here? So the Gemara answers Kidder Rav. No, here also it was only rabbinic, like Rav said. The Omar Rav. Yes, they ran over coffins, but those coffins were not necessarily sending Tumah upwards. Dvar Torah, the halacha is midoraisa oil. When it comes to oil again, what's the problem with the kohen running over a grave? He's not touching the body. The problem is Tumas oil, that the Tumah goes up. So the halacha is oil kol sheyesh bo chalal tefa choitzitz b'fnei Tumah. If a body is under a roof and there's a tefach, if there's a space of a tefach, then the roof blocks the tumah from going up. Tumah stops there. V'she'ein b'chalal tefach, if there's no space, if there isn't a tefach of space, ein echotetz b'fnei tumah, then the roof does not block the tumah from rising, and the tumah rises straight through, and a person walking overhead will become tummy. What's that? What if the mace is touching the aron at the side? That wouldn't matter, because then the aron is going to be tmei mace. The aron is not going to be a mace. The aron is tmei mace. Tmei mace is not, that doesn't create oil. Right? It's only the dead body itself that creates oil. Yeah, but person walking above it won't be affected.
So why would an airplane would be a problem? The bottom of the airplane becomes like the cover. So it's always going to hit the bottom of the airplane before it hits the people.
The truth is, you can ask in general, why would any cemetery be a problem?
Maybe there's no space.
Let's see. We'll see what will answer your question to. So now, most coffins do have a space of a tefach, and therefore it blocks the tumor from rising. So essentially, it's fine for a kohen to do his daily jog through a cemetery. The gazu, however, the Chachamim made a gezeira al sheyesh bahem mishum sheein bahem. The Chachamim said, but if Kohanim are going to make it a habit, of walking through cemeteries, they'll easily come to also walk over in a case where there is not that space of a tefach. So therefore, it's a gzeira derabbanan. In a general way, we can say that a kohen, meanwhile, that a kohen walking through a cemetery is only aser midirabbanan, because generally most of those graves will have that space of the tefach. Therefore, o mishum kvayd malachim legazbur rabbanan. Therefore, when it's an issue of a king's honor, the chachamim waived their gezeira, and it's okay. Now, well, theoretically, the same thing would apply for when they put the body in. They cover it with like these stones, slabs of stone, right? So let's see. The truth is that this is not really so relevant. So Tosfos already points this out. This is in Deep Paskin and Shulchan Aruch. There's a big qualification that the Gemara doesn't mention here. The tumah is only blocked if you give what we call room for the tumah to escape. Meaning, if a grave is completely sealed, the tumah comes up no matter what the story is. When we say that if there's a space of a tefach, the tumah doesn't rise, that's only if you made an opening somewhere else. You got to ventilate it, right? Made an opening somewhere else for the tumah to, so to speak, escape. They were getting into all the intricacies of Masechta Oilus, but that's the way it works. In earlier times, that was how it was, because they buried sideways. They used to bury in rock, right? These tombs, right? So you can actually have an opening. But now, the Shulchan Aruch already says, in our day and age, when graves are just completely covered over, this whole concept doesn't apply, and the graveyard, the area over the graves is Tamei Midaraisa, and it would be forbidden for a Kayan to actually go through. So this was relevant then, when the coffins, or however it was set up, actually had an opening for the tumah to escape.
Do we have the plain question?
So therefore, in the plain question, will be the same thing.
It could escape. Once it hits the bottom of the plane, it could go right or left. I mean, there's plenty of air at that point.
Once it hits the bottom of the plane, is really leaving room for it to escape. That's true. A big issue with the planes is that since the planes are metal, you have the issue of cherev arayu kechalo. Metal is a major conductor of tumas meis. The metal itself, when it's exposed to tumas meis, turns into the status of the body itself. That's part of the discussion. I don't know the whole discussion. Yeah. So I don't know the full discussion. That's part of the discussion. I don't know the full extent of it. Okay. So lemaisa, what? Okay, so Lamaisa, where we stand now, we've been trying to disprove. Lamaisa remain with our assertion that yes, a human dignity does not override any Torah prohibition. We've been trying to disprove it, but have not yet managed, and we still have some way to go.